Welcome to Resurrection Recovery, a ministry of hope and healing provided by Church of the Resurrection. This podcast is produced by Resurrection Recovery participants as a way to share their experience, strength, and hope as they move through the recovery journey. You can join us every Thursday night at 6 p.m. for a community meal and a personal story, and then support groups at 7 p.m. Check our website at core.org/recovery for special events, location, and a group that might fit your need.
We start with just a moment of silence, and when we're in our moment of silence, it's a time for me and maybe for you to think about your friends or brothers or sisters that are still struggling out there, outside these walls and also inside these walls. And so I always just say a little prayer for my friends that I know are struggling, and then we'll say the short version of the prayer. Thank you. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So, again, welcome. Resurrection Recovery is a grassroots program that we started here back in November. All of our meals are provided by people or organizations that have been affected by addiction in one way or another. Tonight's meal was provided by Price Chopper, and we got a good one tonight, didn't we? So let's thank Price Chopper for that meal. The meal's really not the important part of the evening. It's coming together for fellowship to where everybody in this room, I'm going to suspect, in one way or another, has been affected by an addiction. And it's a chance for us to all come together and to share some fellowship and to realize you're not alone. And that's the whole intent of this, is to bring people together, provide some hope when you don't have any, when you're struggling, and just think you're all alone. And the point we're trying to make is you're not. And so I'm really glad you're here. And then we finish it up with a testimony, somebody sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Because that, for me, I mean, I don't mind a sermon, but to hear somebody's testimony, for me personally, is very powerful. And so each week we have somebody sharing their testimony. Tonight you're going to hear from Toby Cook here in just a second. Next week we have Kent with the AA group that's here. He's here tonight. He'll be sharing. And then in 2 weeks we have Kevin from Midwest Recovery. So every week we're going to have somebody else or somebody up here that has been affected by addiction in one way or another. So I think Toby, are you here, Toby? Okay, you are. So I'm going to welcome Toby up here. Toby is, well, I'm going to talk about him real quick. Toby is a vice president of publicity with the Kansas City Royals. He's been doing that 13 years. I knew Toby. He was also an anchor for WDAF-TV, right? 15 years in broadcast. Most recently, before he went to the Royals with WDAF-TV. So anyway, let's welcome Toby Cook.
Thank you, Tom. I got to tell you that I'm having just one of the best weeks I've had in a long, long time. Really, really good week. And it's culminated by you all serving me a meal by Price Chopper, the official grocer of the Kansas City Royals. Wow. I really have had a wonderful week. I spent some, like, intense, wonderful quality time with my wife of 26 years this week, and some great, great time with my second child, our oldest daughter, this week. And they both, these moments of family time came, and I'm not one of these guys that's like quality versus quantity, and I want to spend good, so I don't think that way too much, but this was just outstanding. And I had a swell of gratitude heading into tonight, based on circumstances that led me to spend some time with Barbara, my wife, and Molly, one of my daughters. And then to finish it off by being here this evening, when it almost didn't happen, I texted Tom yesterday and I said, I would just start working on a plan B if you can. So a few days ago on Friday at our home, I'm in another part of the house and I hear this yell. And if you are a member of a family or teach at a school or hang out with people in general, you know a yell that sounds a little bit different than every other yell when something's gone horribly wrong. My wife tripped in our house and fell on her elbow and was in pretty good amount of pain. We went to the doctor. You broke it. You broke your elbow. We have five kiddos, including three that are at home, and is very, very busy around our house, and you can imagine what that was all going to be about. Well, she ended up getting into surgery on Wednesday of this week, and by Wednesday afternoon, I wasn't completely sure that she was going to be okay for me to leave, and so I let Tom know. Well, as God provided, my oldest son comes home from K-State. He's going on a trip tomorrow, and he comes home a little bit early. My daughter, who's also in ballet, like my daughter Molly, didn't have rehearsal tonight, and she always has rehearsal. She's 18. So I had two adult children that were able to hang out with her, and as my good friend Mike Sweeney says, there are no coincidences. You and I were meant to be together tonight, and I'm very, very grateful for that. And I'm going to do something that is very annoying that speakers do sometime, and that is that I'm going to wrap up the description of why I had an opportunity to have a wonderful time with my wife and my daughter out of some very, very weird circumstances. And I'm going to do that about 5 minutes before I close. It's like, really? They always do that. It's like back when I was on television and we would tease something. You need to know this about the coronavirus and it'll save your life. Coming up in 2 minutes after this break. Well, this won't save your life, what I'm going to tell you, but well, maybe it will. It saved mine. I'm very grateful to be here tonight. My name is Toby and I'm an alcoholic. I had my last drink on August the 5th of 2012. We had the All-Star Game at Kauffman Stadium in the summer of 2012, about a week and a half. So it was a very, very tender and emotional time for me, and it was the culmination of really 6 months of dipping my toe in the water, of trying to figure out whether I really belonged in these rooms, and a lifetime of crying out for help at where in the world do I belong in this world. And I came into these programs and finding out that we all find much more similarities than differences, no matter what our background is or no matter what we're doing, and that you people are my people and I'm your people. And it's a magical thing that happens when one alcoholic talks to another. So I'm going to share just a few thoughts about my recovery over the past 7+ years. I was scared to death. I had gone to a friend at the Royals and told her that I was struggling with alcohol and that I thought maybe I needed to get some help. And she says, well, you know, Toby, you can do that and you can take some time off. It's considered disability and the Royals will have your back. And you can imagine, after being a daily drinker for 20 years. And I was a pretty light daily drinker for a long, long time until it really swirled out of control. But you can imagine, as a wonderful alcoholic brain, I said, no, you know what, I'll do it here in a little bit. I'll do it soon. You know, today could be the day that it all ends as bad as it could. The very quick, long story short is that on July the 19th of 2012, I had somebody at the Royals say, hey, you know that thing that we talked about a couple of months ago? Your friends and family here at the Royals know that something's up, and it's time for you to get help. And I had started on a week and a half vacation and was going to be back in 10 days from work, and she said, here's a little bit of help that you might be able to get. It's called the Shawnee Mission Medical Center Outpatient Program through the IOP, the Intensive Outpatient Program. And you can't come back until you do. You know, I remember getting a detention in ninth grade in algebra class, and that was about as big a trouble as I ever got in high school. I grew up in a small town in southeast Kansas. My dad was an elementary school principal. My mom stayed at home. Had a wonderful childhood. I'm a bit of a walk-on when it comes to this program. I had one aunt in Michigan who was drunk for a lot of years, and she's been sober for a lot of years. I had another uncle in Missouri who died from this disease. She's going to die with it. He died from it. But it doesn't really feel like I came from a bunch of alcoholics. And my sister and brothers, we just didn't drink very much. I mean, it was a pretty moderate growing up. But I discovered a little bit of the thrill of alcohol in high school, and then I didn't drink a whole lot in college. Had a buddy buy me a six-pack of Michelob for my 21st birthday, and it actually stayed in the refrigerator for 3 or 4 weeks. Can you imagine that? In college, no less. Had some emotional bumps and bruises that I won't bore you with tonight. Had a wonderful career. When I was 9 years old, I got a really neat story professionally. When I was 9 years old, I decided I wanted to be a play-by-play announcer for the Royals. Because when I was 8 years old, I decided I wanted to be a Major League Baseball player, and I got one hit my first year in Little League. One hit. I batted .087. It was an accidental triple. It was an accidental triple down the right field line. My eyes were closed. I ended up at third base. I was pretty fast. I walked a couple of times, got in the paper. That was my 15 minutes of fame. So enthralled with baseball, but I realized, you know what? I don't think this is going to happen. I don't think Albert Pujols hits .087 his first year in Little League, right? So I decided to pursue broadcasting and eventually became a broadcaster. Worked for 4 different television stations, including 9 years here at Fox 4 in Kansas City. And then I've been with the Royals for 13 years. I've had some great jobs. I had great jobs when I was a kid. I was a shoeshine boy for a while in Independence, Kansas. I did the announcing and the scorekeeping down at the ballparks during the summer. My friends said, when are you ever going to get a real job, right? And I had some really, really fun experiences. Got to cover a bunch of presidential campaigns when I was a reporter. Got to cover a bunch of Royals home openers. And then one day, out of the blue, I got a call from the Royals, and they had asked me if I would be willing to come and MC a Royals Charities event. And I said yes. And then the next year, they asked me back, and one thing led to the other, and I ended up going to work for my favorite baseball team. Remember, 8 years old, thought I wanted to be a baseball player. 9 years old, I think I'll be a play-by-play announcer for the Royals. Well, I didn't know that it was actually going to happen. And 30 years later, in my late 30s, I'm working for the Kansas City Royals, and I'm seeing Denny Matthews and Fred White in the flesh at the stadium. I got it all going for me. I had a very difficult moment with a girlfriend in college. I didn't end up marrying her. I ended up marrying my wife, Barbara. We've been married for 26 years. We've had 5 kids. I'm a convert. This is kind of interesting. I grew up Lutheran, but I'm a convert to Catholicism. I'm one of the only guys I know who had a mess of kids as a Protestant and quit drinking as a Catholic. I've been blessed beyond belief. I think I used that phrase to Tom in the text yesterday. I've been blessed beyond belief. And I was a lousy, stinking drunk. I learned in this program very early on that I had the 2 biggies. I had a physical allergy to alcohol, and I had a mental obsession. When I start drinking, I don't know when I'm going to stop. Now, it wasn't always like that, but my default was, I'd like to start drinking, and I'd like to stop when I fall asleep on the couch. I think that's going to be the plan. And if I do it every once in a while or occasionally, and that was a good time, I think I'll do it a lot. Maybe every night. Why not, right? Why waste time? I also had a mental obsession, which means that I think about alcohol differently than other people. You know, I became a pretty big Royals fan and started to understand things about the world a little bit when I was 11, 12 years old. And about 11 or 12 years old, I noticed alcohol on TV. And I thought, that's what I'm going to do when I get older. Took me a little while to get there. I had that Michelob in the fridge for a pretty long time. But eventually, I got there. The disease waited me out. And I made a decision at age 24, I'm an adult, and so I'm going to drink every day because that's what adults do. And a lot of times it was one drink a day, but it was non-negotiable. It had to be that one drink for the day. And if I didn't have the drink, or if I was going to have a day where I didn't, I was thinking about it the entire time. This is a mental obsession that non-alcoholics don't have. I got into the whole thing like some people in this room may have, where you realize that you got a little, maybe you've got a problem, or maybe you need to just calm it down a little bit, right? These people in college went crazy. I happened to not go crazy. I sort of sowed my alcoholic wild oats just a little bit at a time for a lot of different years as it progressed. But when I started thinking about the disease and thinking about the fact that this might be an issue, I started to try to control it. I'm only going to drink this. I'm not going to drink until after this. I don't think that non-alcoholics sit there and think about how they're going to drink and why they're going to drink and what time they're going to drink, etc. So I had the two classics. The other saying that I loved when I first came into the program was, when the pain of the present becomes worse than the fear of the future, we act. And I got that gift of desperation. You see, I not only had only gotten in trouble once or twice in high school and barely ever in trouble otherwise, and was a model citizen and appeared on the outside to be very happy and have a good career, be married with kids and on and on and on, somewhat put together, I was struggling with how am I ever going to cross that threshold and say, I have a problem with alcohol, I think I'm a drunk. Wait a minute, when you say that out loud and it's out there, you can't take it back. It's like they say in the book, a drunk man gets his legs cut off, he can't grow back new legs. Once you say it out loud, it's awfully hard to take it back, and I didn't ever want to get into that position, so I started doing the classic thing, where I started to try to downshift while I'm flying down the road, right? I'm only going to drink it this time, I'm only going to do this, I'm going to kind of control it. And the pain of the present became worse than the fear of the future. Now, I was given, and I don't pat myself on the back for this, but I was given a gift of desperation. It took me a long time to understand that. I was devastated. I was incredulous. I was PO'd at the Royals and at my family and my friends who didn't understand what I was feeling inside. And let me just go back and start over and make this okay again. I was never going to make it okay again. I was always going to go back, cunning, baffling, powerful. And I finally, through that gift of desperation, realized that, you know what? There is an easier, softer way. By God's grace and the fellowship of the program, I've been sober for 7 years plus. Thank you. You can clap it. In fact, this is March the 5th, so what are we doing here? 7.5 plus 1 month today. The first time that I showed up at the Shawnee Mission Medical Center outpatient program was on Monday, August the 6th of 2012. On the 5th, the day I took my last drink, July 19th, when the Royals said you can't come back until you get help, I drank every single day. The Thursday before, there was a chance that I was going to get into the program early, and I hadn't drank all day, and I was ready to go. And they said, we can't take you till Monday. So I'm going to show them, and I got drunk that night. Well, I don't know if I got drunk, but I drank that night, and the next night, and the next night, and the next night. And I was sitting on the front porch of my house, and my wife came out, and she sat there, and she said, are you ready? And I said, yes, I'm ready. I don't know if I really was, but fake it till you make it. I said it, and I went to the stupid IOP the next day, and scared to frickin' death. And then I went back, and then I went back again. 24 hours passed, 48 hours passed, 72 hours passed without a drink. My head started to clear a little bit. I felt better for the first time in forever in the morning. And I started to get a clearer picture of things. And I hadn't even gone back to work yet. It was scary. It was, you know what, I got to tell you, I've never told anybody this, let alone a group like this. I was so scared to death walking back into Kauffman Stadium 3 weeks after I had been told you can't come back until you get help. More often than not, and this happens with those of you who have experienced the ninth step where you have to make an amends to somebody, they welcomed me back with open arms. I'm going to call him out now because he's no longer the president of the Royals, but Dan Glass, who was David Glass's son, God love him and God rest his soul, he just died a few months ago. Dan Glass and my boss, Kevin Ulick, had my back so fast. They gathered my people together and they said, we're going to put our arms around Toby. He's going to be okay. He's going to do what he needs to do, and he's going to come back stronger than ever. Now, they were, as non-alcoholics, forecasting something that they couldn't prove was going to happen. Because we can't prove it. But since then, I've had an opportunity to have every single day of my son's high school and college career, he's had a sober dad. Every single day of the 2013, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19 seasons, I've seen Royals games and I've been completely sober. I have seen my kids grow up. I've seen my second child become a professional ballerina. We ended up going to Grand Rapids, Michigan this past weekend, which was the excursion that we took because she was going to do an audition up there. We had just a blast. I have another daughter who's going into it. I have a 12-year-old who's a great young man. I have a daughter who's 9 years old, and she has Down syndrome. Can I say hell and damn in here, or do I need to? Okay, because I know. Thank you, Tom. So I'm going to throw a few more in now that we're heading toward the end. I drank the hell over that. I'll tell you a sweet story about it. I got an indication that we were pregnant with our fifth child, and Barbara and I were older parents at the time. And she called me, and she had left me a message, and I was walking down the third base line of the concourse at Kauffman Stadium, and she said, they called and they said, my numbers are elevated. We have to go in. Well, I didn't know what numbers elevated mean, but it probably means that if you're 44 years old and you're having a baby and numbers are elevated, that there could be something wrong with the fetus. And we had a pretty good indication when we were going in that we were going to find out that this baby could have Down syndrome. We got in ultrasound, not only confirmed Down syndrome, but confirmed a heart valve defect that was going to require open heart surgery when she was 8 months old. That was a really, really hard day. I'm sure I drank over that. Now, I'm living a double life at this point. I've got the marriage. I've got all of these kids. I've got this great baseball career after a fun TV career. And I got to tell you, it wasn't all BS. Hell, damn, and BS. I'll leave it to that. I'll keep it to that. Some of it was just me. I was fine. Barbara told me that most mornings you'd wake up and it was you again. And then you weren't you later. You know? Those of us who have struggled with this addiction and have been in the fog of alcohol have had plenty of times where we were decent human beings and maybe we did the right things. And I had a moment, I had a peace of God moment. It was when she told me that, a peace of God which surpasses all understanding, where I thought, okay, I'm going to be the dad of a child with special needs. Okay. I mean, it was almost too big of a thing to get my brain around, so I decided not to worry about it, that it was just going to be okay. So all of this is going on. I've got this double life where I've got all these cool things that are on the public side of me, and I'm swirling around the drain, drinking more and more, passing out at night, and not even, I don't know if I felt remorse about it or not. I had probably reached that point where it was like, well, if you'd have my life, you'd drink like I do, right? These pathetic things that we think and say. Gift of desperation, got into the program, found out about the two biggies that I had, realized that the fear of the pain of the present became fear of the future, and I acted. And I did the same thing that I did in IOP, 24, 48, 72. I went to another meeting, and then another meeting, and then another meeting. Then I got a sponsor, and my sponsor didn't care who I was. I'll share this with you. I don't talk about this a lot, but it's really hard sometimes to maintain anonymity in a meeting when a lot of people recognize you or know who you are. Or it's like, what meetings have I seen you at before? Or what church do you go to? Or what grocery store do you go to? You know, that kind of thing. And I'll say something about anonymity in a second. But I started working with a sponsor who, again, didn't care that I'd been on TV. He didn't care that I worked for the Royals. And he laid out these things, and he talked about the steps. And it was pretty obvious that my life was unmanageable. It was pretty obvious that I had done insane things, and I always believed I had a God of my own understanding, which, by the way, my higher power and the God of my understanding eventually became one, but I had to struggle through that for a little bit. And the fourth and the fifth step, and started working through the steps and on. I had a really, really hard time with six and seven. I kind of jumped over those. Six and seven deal with our character defects, and I didn't want to deal with my character defects. I think I just wanted to keep them, you know? I'll go ahead and not drink, but I want to keep my character defects around, right? And it just didn't work after a while. The pain of doing that became worse than the fear of acting, and I really started working on six and seven. And in the last year, it was about a year and a half ago, and this is a cunning, baffling, and powerful disease. It was about a year and a half ago, I realized that I was going to meetings, and I was reading the literature, and I was talking to my sponsor every once in a while, but I was really not working the program all that well, and I was trying to do it all on my own, and I re-engaged. And in this period of re-engagement, I've had some of the greatest spiritual and personal growth that I've ever had. It's true that if you go through pain, you can experience growth in ways that you can't imagine. I came here tonight through a friend, a mutual friend of Tom and mine by the name of Tony Whitworth. Tony sent me a text today. She couldn't be here, but she said that she was very excited that I was speaking tonight, and she got me in touch with Tom Langhofer, who contacted me and said, what do you think about getting Dayton Moore out here, our general manager? Now, Dayton's not in the program. I don't know that he's had two alcoholic beverages in his life, but he has a great heart for people, and he came out and spoke. Were any of you there that night that Dayton was here? Yeah, he was great. He did it as a personal favor to me, and I'm not saying that. I'm saying that Dayton was so impressed upon him the importance of people like us in recovery reaching out to others and asking for help, and he was very, very happy to be here that evening. So Tom and I developed this friendship while we were working on that and stayed in touch, and then his daughter got killed at First Friday. And 2 and 3 and 4 days later at AA meetings, we were talking about the fact that Tom was in an AA meeting the next, whenever it was, 2 days later, 4 days later, etc. And he said to me, and I love this, if anybody has the right to drink, it's me. And I thought, this is why I asked if I could cuss. I thought, that's damn right. Because I've thought to myself in recovery, what would it be that would be just too much? You know, I've been able to work the program in a lot of different scenarios. I've learned that the problem is not the problem. It's my reaction to it. I've learned to keep my mouth shut. Why am I talking? Wait. Keep my side of the street clean. It's not about me. I can't control people, places, and things. I can't control other people. I can only control how I act and what I say. You know what? If one of my children died, I think that maybe I would start drinking again. And Tom said, I haven't had a desire to drink. I don't know why, but I haven't. And if I don't drink when my daughter gets killed, that can be a lesson that no one has to drink again. No one. In my very first AA meeting that I attended, I told you I dipped my toe in the water. There was a 2-year gap between my first meeting and my second meeting. The first meeting happened two years after the second meeting, and the second meeting happened after the Royals invited me to go get some help or not come back. So I was on that path for a while. And a guy in the program in that meeting said, "You never have to drink again." And he hasn't, and by God's grace, I haven't. But you know what? This is a one day at a time thing. And I could drink tomorrow. But every single morning I ask God, "Lord, help me not drink today. Keep me sober today. Forgive me my sins and remove my shortcomings. Keep me happy, joyous, and free, peaceful and serene." And I move on. And I read in a literature just this week, or maybe late last week, and I loved it, and I'm glad that I remembered it because I wanted to talk about it tonight. It said, "You gave your drink problem over to God. What are you trying to grab it back from him for? He's got it. You've given it over." These are some things that I've learned. By the way, it was really, really fun getting sober and going off and winning a World Series. I had my three oldest kids with me in New York, which is crazy. They called me 3 days before we were getting ready to go to New York, and they said, I'm a fancy vice president with the Royals, and they said, "We're letting the officers bring their entire family." And I'm like, "Oh, I wish you hadn't called. You just made my life so much harder than it was going to be otherwise." So I talked to Barbara, and she took one for the team, and she kept the two at home because it just wasn't going to work. Caroline, our youngest, is, you have to put parameters around her, and Central Park and Manhattan was not going to be a good enough parameter for her. So I had three teenagers in New York for a weekend, and so I took one for the team as well. But God, we had a blast. We went to the games. We lost the first game on a Friday night. We won the next two to win the World Series. Flew back all night. It was so fun, and it was great experiencing it sober. It was great experiencing the next year when we got to go to the White House. We flew in an airplane, a charter plane, got to be there in the White House for an hour and a half. But as I told Tom this week, none of that compares. None of it, not even close, compares to the joy I have from being sober today. And I know that you and I have a peace and joy that other people may not get to experience, and that's a miracle. The reason why I spent so much time with my wife the last couple of days is because she broke her arm. That was a bad situation. But from it came really kind of a wonderful opportunity for me to be of service to her. My daughter is in Oklahoma City, and her contract was not renewed for next year. She was devastated for about 24 hours, and then she got her act in gear and started scheduling auditions all over, and one of them was in Grand Rapids, Michigan this past weekend. So that wasn't a very happy day when she found out. But we got to spend these 48, 72 hours together in the car, and we just had a great time. And I'm getting this pattern in my life where it's like these challenges that, you know, "I beg your pardon, I never promised you a rose garden," God says, through a song. It isn't always going to be easy. And in fact, even when it's bad, it eventually can become good in recovery, right? We sense it and feel it, this phoenix rising from the ashes. I'm going to wrap up in a couple of minutes with a story about the day that I got the phone call about my daughter, Caroline, who I think was going to have Down syndrome, and then 2 days later, we found out she was. She was born. She's beautiful. We had a psychologist tell us, pretty soon you're not going to be thinking of this baby as our baby with Down syndrome. You're just going to be thinking of her as Caroline. And she's the rock star of our family. She's completely changed my siblings, or her siblings' lives forever. They treat people differently than they've treated anybody. From the bad comes something wonderful. So on a Friday night, Barbara called me and she said, "Well, they called and they confirmed it. Okay, I'll be home as soon as I can." We were playing the Cardinals that night. It was a Friday. I go down to visit somebody in the Buck O'Neill Legacy Seat, which is one of my favorite programs. It's been around. It's a really good. You sat in it, didn't you? It is a great seat. And as I was standing there, there was a guy that was walking up, and he was talking to me, and he's the guy that sits right behind the Buck O'Neill Legacy Seat recipient that you see on TV. Same poor guy that's on TV every single night, and he's sitting there going, look at this, and he's on Crown Vision every night, and it's the same one. And he said, hey, I got my a buddy of mine from Lamar, Missouri here. He's here with his son. His son has Down syndrome. Of course, my eyes got that big. I had known for 2 hours that I was going to be the father of a child with Down syndrome. So the boy comes up. He's 14 years old, good-looking kid, got this obnoxious Cardinals T-shirt on. And I talked to his dad, and I said, hey, you might be able to help me out. My wife and I just found out that we're going to be the parents of a child with Down syndrome. So if you got any advice, and grabbed me by the arm, and he said, Toby, I don't know you from Adam, but I'm going to tell you what I tell everybody. I wouldn't wish this on anyone, and he's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. There are days when I wish I didn't have this thing. There are days when I was about ready to say I wish I could drink like a normal person, but I just gave the exact indication of what the alcoholic brain is. I can't say that I would wish alcoholism in it on anyone, but it's the greatest thing that has ever happened to me. Because as a grateful recovering alcoholic, I get to see life in a way that I never would have been able to before. And you got to understand, I'm not all that in a bag of chips. You should have seen me earlier. I was a wonderful caregiver and a husband and father. I was doing so well today with Barbara at home, and then she got snippy about something, and I lost my temper, and we're yelling at each other for 5 seconds, right? We calmed down. I'm a very normal person. But I'll tell you, in our gratitude about our recovery and getting to see things differently, we won the golden prize. We won the key to happiness. And it's better than any World Series ring. And I got a fat World Series ring for working for the Royals back in 2015. And all the other things that come with it, you know, family's important, friends are important, but sobriety's number one. Because if I don't have that, then I don't have anything else. I'm very, very grateful to be here tonight and to speak to you. I would just, my words of encouragement, my experience, strength, and hope are talk to a sponsor often, work the program, don't try to control people, places, and things, and open yourself up to the sunlight of the Spirit, because it works every time it's tried. It works when you work it. I love you, Tom. I love you all. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. If you would like more information about this ministry or Church of the Resurrection, visit our website at core.org/recovery, where you can find a listing of support groups that meet every Thursday. If you would like more immediate attention, our congregational care ministries have several support options such as prayer requests, counseling, etc. at core.org/care. Thank you for listening today.